You know, we've talked a lot on this show in recent years and months about solar panels and solar farms, but we've spent much less time talking about another renewable energy source, and that's wind power. And thought it was worth the time to take a closer look at that. There's some things going on with wind power in the state, some proposals, and there's, I think, nine at least wind power operations. Well, I'll find out. Let's talk to Mike Vickerman. Michael Vickerman is former executive director of Renew Wisconsin. He retired in 2024 after 33 years with that renewable energy advocacy organization. And it's great to have him back. He and I haven't talked on this show for probably since 2023, maybe, Michael? I don't remember exactly.
Mike. Oh, well before then.
Yeah, it's been a while, for sure. But as you listen to Michael, I hope you'll join in. Have you seen large collections of wind turbines in our state and wonder why or how much energy or electricity they produce? You know how wind power compares to solar power generation. We can cover that and a whole lot more with Michael, and I hope you'll join in. Questions, give a call. The number 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Michael, welcome. Of course, wind energy, it counts for, what, about 3% of the electricity we produce here in the state?
Yeah, it's about 3%. Now, a little caveat on that. Actually, much more wind actually flows through the utility lines to customers, but much of that wind power is acquired from out of state.
Maybe Iowa. Do we get it from
So, yeah, in Iowa, almost 6 out of every 10 kilowatt hours produced there is from a wind turbine.
It's amazing to me, like 60% of their energy needs in the state of Iowa are covered by wind.
Yeah, it's an astonishing figure. But some of those wind turbines are owned by Wisconsin utilities, such as Madison Gas and Electric has a pretty large plant just east of Interstate, I think it's 35. And that is the largest source of renewable power that is supplied to its customers. And that's just one example. Mm-hmm. There are a half dozen others.
So, and I know there's a new wind farm proposed for Columbia County. I'm sure you're aware of that. You know about that project?
I do. It's in a very early stage of being reviewed by the Public Service Commission. But it's there are a lot of interesting observations one can draw from it. Because right now, Columbia County has the largest wind project operating in the state of Wisconsin. It's called Glacier Hills, and it's in the Randolph area of Columbia County. That has 90 turbines. This project that's proposed by Alliant Energy will have only half the number of turbines, 47, but almost 60% more rated capacity. And that tells you that there's been a dramatic change in the degree of productivity between the turbines that were installed in 2011, 15 years ago, and today.
So they're much more efficient? Is that it? Or
they're much more powerful. And the reason why they've amped up the power production is because the engineers have learned how to extend the length of the blades, which increases the power conversion zone. And they've done it in such a way that, so two things happen. One is there's just much more air flowing along by the blades. The second thing is the longer blades access very strong winds at the top of the arc.
Yeah.
There's a pretty substantial differential in the strength of the wind between the top of the the blade orbit, if you will, or the circulation, and the bottom. And so these new turbines are actually much more amenable, much more conducive to Wisconsin's wind resource, which is not exactly a rip-roaring resource. But with the slightly taller towers and with especially the longer blades, they have made a substantial increase in productivity.
So here, you look at the other states like Iowa, Minnesota maybe, producing quite a bit of their energy from wind. Why haven't we done more in that area? I mean, what's the difference between Iowa and Wisconsin?
I would single out two factors. The first is that Iowa has a lower population density. It is more resolutely agricultural, and it's the agricultural nature is not just simply more farms, but also a culture that comes with it, where there's it is more accepted there to work the land, and the neighbors respect the landowner's decisions to host a wind turbine. That's part of it. The other is that the winds blow a little bit better, or with more strength in Iowa than compared with Wisconsin. And a combination of that made Iowa a particularly attractive place to build many wind projects. Almost all of them are utility owned. But yeah, so Iowa is really the poster child of wind power development. The technology had to catch up a little bit in order to generate electricity in Wisconsin in a cost-effective fashion. So what was available in 2010 or 2015 was not the best fit for Wisconsin, but with the new generation of turbines, it has become a very economical option.
And I drive through Iowa from time to time on my way to Kansas to visit my daughter, and it feels like the expanse of farmland across the whole state is larger and making it more open, let's put it that way, and making it more desirable. I mean, you can't put those wind units right next to each other. I mean, they need space.
Correct. And so in Wisconsin, what you're seeing is with this slow rebirth of wind power development, the center of development is in southwest Wisconsin, which has a much lower population density than eastern Wisconsin. There's a project in Grant County that's been operating for about 3 years now called Red Barn. And Columbia is scheduled to, if it's approved, it would start operating in 3 years. But alongside an existing project that's been operating for 15 years without any sort of hiccup or complaint or any grumbling. It's been an accepted part of the landscape now.
You know, I watched a little news video. I think it was CBS did one on wind energy and farms, and looking at it from the farmer's point of view, one of the real advantages to me, it seems, is that a farmer will be compensated quite a bit for this, while at the same time not losing a lot of their land.
Yes, that is the value proposition for the property owner. You've pretty much nailed it. One important detail is that the revenue stream from hosting wind turbines is constant. It is predictable. It is, almost the exact opposite of what a typical farmer usually experiences with fluctuating commodity prices and expenses. So that helps the farmer hold on to that property and makes it more attractive, perhaps, to that farmer's sons and daughters to take over the operation.
It's in that particular video. I mean, that, and I don't even know how many windmills were operating on her property or anything else, but she was getting about $35,000 a year from it, and her husband had passed away, and she was in danger of losing the farm. And the only thing that's really saved her and made the farm continue to be productive in the community was that $35,000 a year.
It's a very underappreciated aspect of wind power, is that it reinforces the farmer's resolve to continue farming.
Yeah. Michael Vickerman, our guest today, the former executive director of Renew Wisconsin, no longer on the staff, but remains a board member of Renew Wisconsin, our guest today. It's great to have him back. And if you have a question or comment relating to wind power, I hope you'll join in. The number's 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. My dad built our home back in on a farm back in 1958. The home went up. And today, so I think about 3 years ago, the farm across the road from us, the guy passed on, and the family now has, across from us, a solar farm. So a solar farm is, and when you're comparing the two, Michael, I don't know if you do this or not, but comparing solar versus wind, is it not as easy, easier, better, or are they both just good things?
I mean, from the standpoint of the landowner, from the utility?
Well, from both.
Okay. So solar has made much more of an inroad in Wisconsin than wind power has for a variety of reasons. In Wisconsin, the wind resources concentrated in a few locations. And for example, along the Niagara Escarpment in eastern Wisconsin and along the Military Ridge in southwestern Wisconsin. And where there's high ground and open land, wind becomes actually a viable option. And of course, you have to have transmission lines nearby. But the resource is much more evenly distributed in, yeah. If it's solar. There's a little bit of difference between the amount of sunshine available in Oconee County versus Grant County, but it's much more evenly distributed. So if you look at where the solar projects are, and we have now several dozen operating projects of ranging from a couple of megawatts to 300 megawatts. The 300-megawatt solar farm is on the edge of Iowa and Grant County. It's called Badger Hollow. And there's a wind project now under construction right next door to Badger Hollow. And but you'll notice they run from Grant County to Kenosha County and all the way up to past I-94 going into Hudson and later the Twin Cities. And there are projects in the northeastern quadrant of the state. It's basically the what motivates the selection of a particular location for solar is proximity to a strong transmission, a strong part of the transmission grid. So, but the interesting thing about solar is that it is scalable up, is easily scalable upward and easily scalable downward. So you can scale a solar array down to something that fits on your rooftop, and it still makes economic sense. Now, for the very large solar projects, they're competing in the wholesale market, where electricity prices generally range about 4 to 5 to 6 cents. And for homeowners, they're looking to offset electricity price at 18, 19 cents a kilowatt hour. So it's a very different price that to beat. So that is another factor in solar's favor. And the last thing about solar I have to point out is that it's a very easy to maintain a technology. You just you set the panels out, and they just sit there and bask underneath the sun, and and they don't experience much wear and tear. The degradation over the course of years and decades is pretty minute. It works in the long term.
Michael Vickerman, our guest today, as we talk with him about wind, and we've gotten into solar as well. Our guest today, it's great to have him with us. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks so much for joining us today. Larry Mueller here with Michael Vickerman, a member of the board of directors of Renew Wisconsin. He was the executive director, retired in 2024 from that after 33 years with the Renewable Energy Advocacy Association. And callers with questions, Mike in Madison, we'll go to you next. Hi, Mike.
Hello. I live in a very windy area, Madison. I've been for a decade thinking about putting wind turbines on the ridge of my roof, even though I've been told I'm not allowed to. Even though they're small, 1 meter or 4 foot diameter ones, and they're like sailboat size. And so that leads me to my question, which is the rules for installing wind turbines in residential urban areas. And second question is your opinion on the vertical wind turbines for residential use, and why we haven't started using any of those for large-scale commercial uses.
Okay.
All right. So in regards to what you can do on your property in within a municipality, it's all set forth within the municipal zoning code. So you probably would need to situate the turbine at least the length of the vertical length of the turbine. That includes the uppermost extension of the blades. You have to set that back by at least one times the tower in total height. You mentioned attaching a turbine to your rooftop. I would not recommend that. I would advise strongly against that. The last thing you want to do is to attach your house to a device that's going to vibrate, and is going to vibrate significantly in high wind events. Your house is not built to absorb that kind of stress, that kind of torque that's placed on one part of the rooftop. If you want to explore the small turbine option, please consider just planting it in the ground and working from there. You'll be happier with the results. Last question was about vertical axis wind turbines. So to describe that to your listeners, these are turbines that basically look like egg beaters. They bow out and reach their maximum circumference at the center of the tower, and then they slope back towards the top of the tower. It's possible that there will come a particular manufacturing process that makes vertical axis wind turbines an economically rational way to generate electricity for yourself. There is a built-in problem with vertical axis wind turbines, and that is that the resource, the strength of the wind, increases with height, but the maximum power conversion area for a vertical wind turbine is exactly one half of the tower height. So you're kind of there's a reason why wind turbines look like pinwheels. It's to capture the strong winds. Your vertical axis wind turbine is operating with a substantially inferior wind resource.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike, for calling. Dave in Oconto County, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Yes, that was a very interesting comment about the vertical. I believe they're also known as the tulip turbines. and on financial.
Oh, nuts. You're breaking up. Oh, man. I'm really sorry for that, Dave. We just can't hear you. He was talking about financial benefits in Iowa. I had a question, I think, relating to that. And I think the financial benefits for Iowa residents is pretty good.
I'm not aware, actually, of any incentive programs for residential wind turbines in Iowa. They may be offered by the utility as opposed to the state.
I was thinking about the cost in terms of rates.
Oh, well, Iowa's electric rates are significantly lower than Wisconsin's electric rates. So that's a good thing if you're just an ordinary customer. But if you're trying to offset the cost of energy by supplying it yourself, that actually complicates matters, and you probably have to wait much longer before the investment amortizes and you start earning a positive return.
Scott in Sun Prairie, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Larry and Mike. See, I've got kind of a weird economic question. I'm a great fan of the Apple TV series Landman, where Billy Bob Thornton plays the guy who negotiates oil leases in the southwest of Texas, sort of the antithesis of what we're talking about here. But in one episode, he has his son, and they're looking at a big wind turbine. He goes on this long rant about how wind turbines are not economical, that by the time you produce all the parts and put them up and do all the maintenance on them, there's no better for the environment than oil would be. I'm assuming that was $75 a barrel oil. But is there any truth to that? Should I believe Billy Bob?
It goes without saying that you're relying on a work of fiction there. But as it relates to wind power development, the state with the largest investment in wind generation is Texas. Texas has about, it's about 30% of its electricity comes from wind power. The state is almost ideal for wind generation because of the large expanses of open land. The one limiting factor in Texas is access to transmission. But Texas, wind development in Texas has been 100% success story in that state. Now, electricity does different things than a barrel of oil. A barrel of oil's principal value comes in the form of providing motion and power, especially in vehicles, fairly inexpensively. Electricity really can't do that. Electricity's the uses of electricity, and basically 20% of the energy we use in this country comes out as electricity. 80% is fuel of one sort or another. Electricity is great at driving motors. Electricity is outstanding for lighting interiors, powering radio stations. It does a lot of little things very, very well. And you wouldn't want to have a internal combustion engine doing the same thing. So the comparison that's drawn up, and which Billy Bob Thornton opines on, is really kind of apples and oranges. They're both extremely useful technologies, and they occupy very different places in the national and global economy.
They do indeed. Although Landman is a pretty good, fun show to watch. Mm-hmm.
I should watch that. Yeah,
it's really kind of an interesting look at the oil industry itself, mm-hmm. which I found really. So, should state and utility companies invest more in renewable?
The utilities are, in fact, on their own, investing a very large percentage of their generation-based investments is going into renewables, going into solar and wind and battery storage. That's also a part of it. It's the relationship between renewables and battery storage to the emerging digital economy is something that a recent announcement in Minnesota sheds light on in rather dramatic fashion. Google signed a contract with Xcel Energy, which is the largest electric utility in Minnesota, also supplies a good portion of western Wisconsin. In this, as a part of this contract, Google will pay for all of the capital expenditure required to provide a lot of wind, a little bit of solar, and a lot of battery storage capacity. And why is it doing this? It's because it's the least expensive way to supply whatever facilities or data centers and other ancillary activities there.
That they're going to need.
Yeah.
And we're out of time. Michael, come back and be with us again. I appreciate it very much.
Love to be here.
Michael Vickerman, former executive director of Renew Wisconsin. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store.